Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the That Girl Guide. Thank you so much for being here. I'm super excited for today's episode, as I am every episode, but this has been highly requested, as is most all the topics that I try and go over, because I try and make episodes for what you guys are requesting and asking for. But today's episode is a guide on finding your passions and thriving in your first big girl job. So, as some of you guys might know, I don't know if I have ever even talked or like addressed what I do outside of making this fun podcast, but I currently work in the beauty space. I work as a marketing director for a portfolio of beauty brands. I started working back in college as an intern for the company called Babe Lash, then moved to a full-time role there, and then moved into a marketing director and e-commerce role. And then I moved to the portfolio company that owned Babe Lash to a broader marketing role. So I work on Babe Original, previously known as Babe Lash, along with 5-6 other beauty brands that are all in Ulta and Sephora. They're in Cosmoprof, they're in SalonCentric, they're on Amazon. So I personally feel like I have a dream job, and I've got to learn a ton of amazing things about work and life and beauty. And I also get to work with amazing people. So one of the amazing people that I work with and used to report directly into is Rachel Judd. And so I interviewed her, tracked her down to see if I could meet with her to understand her passions and, you know, what she has done and learned in her career over time, because she has been in the workforce far longer than I have. I have been working for 6+ years, and learned a lot and had a lot of growing learning moments, but just wanted to get her perspective as well. So that's what we chatted about today. A quick intro on Rachel that I'm just gonna go over is throughout her 20 years in the beauty industry, she has had the opportunity to serve in a wide variety of leadership roles, spanning sales, marketing, and opportunities in both corporate and entrepreneurial environments. Currently, Rachel is the president of Babe Original, and so that's where I met Rachel, because she was my direct boss. And Babe Original is a beauty brand focused on celebrating the authenticity of customers. She also serves on the Professional Beauty Association Foundation board and currently serves as their chair. Rachel's genuine love of people and curiosity has been an integral part of her journey within the professional beauty industry. The opportunity to serve and ideate with others is one of the most rewarding aspects of her roles. If you ask Rachel, it's the hard moments and difficult roads where you learn the most, which I definitely agree with. And Rachel has often been called tenacious and admittedly loves being told that something is impossible, because it drives her to think differently and find creative solutions. I have experienced this firsthand and love that about her. And I feel like I also like that sometimes. Rachel views her work as more significant than just a job or even a career, which, you guys know, I also think that work is great and you get paid to learn. And I've said that on multiple podcasts and on the That Girl Guide Instagram, just because why think of it as like something you have to do? Why not think about it as like something amazing that you get to do? Her family, Rachel's family, is firmly at the center of her why, and she strives to be an example to her daughters, who are 10 and 6. They're so cute, of what is possible when you put your heart, your mind, and your full effort behind your dreams. Outside of work and being an amazing mom, she loves reading, playing pickleball, anything that gets her outdoors. Her favorite place in the world is on a beach or a boat. And she loves fashion and has a thing for all things 70s, including vintage jewelry. Her favorite food includes all things Thai, Greek, or pizza, which also agree with. So anyways, I hope you guys love today's episode, love meeting with Rachel as much as I do. She's amazing, and I have learned so much from her working with her and under her, and even in this podcast, things that I didn't even know. So I hope you love today. Hi Rachel, welcome to the That Girl Guide.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
We have so many questions, and I feel like I know you really well, or I think I do, but then going through these questions, I feel like I don't know the answers to all of them, so I'm excited to dive into it.
Well, I'm so excited to share, and I feel like you do know me pretty well, so, but maybe there's always more to know.
There's always more. Okay, so we got a ton of questions that were submitted around passion, choosing your major, how to get good job experience, job hunting, best career advice, how to pivot both your career and major. So we're going to start first with, how do you deal with having multiple passions? Can you pursue it all? What to do if you have too many options, which honestly, I feel like it's a great problem to have. And how do you actually know you love something instead of just loving the idea of it?
Such good questions. I think it's a problem I think a lot of people deal with, I think particularly a lot of young women. But I think having a variety of interests is actually a strength. I think about the most interesting person you know, and that person probably is into 10 different things. They're not just into one thing. And they're good at a lot of different things. And
why is that? I feel like people that are like good at something are good at like a lot of things and do have a lot of interests.
You know, I think
a lot of... Not to derail.
No, I think a lot of times it's because those are the people that aren't afraid to be terrible at something. And so they'll try a lot more new things than the average person who maybe is a little more afraid of looking silly or of failing. And so those people that have that adventurous spirit or a lot of different interests, a lot of times it may not even be that they're necessarily good at everything. It's just that they're brave enough to try lots of different things. So in my opinion, it's not a bad thing to have multiple passions. And this is something that I will say I have probably struggled with throughout my life because I have a lot of interests, and there's only so much time in the day.
You do. I love that about you.
Thanks. I think the second part of the question of, you know, can you pursue it all? I heard once somebody said, and this was particularly about working, being a working woman or a working young woman with friends and obligations and family stuff going on, whether that be your parents or your siblings or if you're in the stage of life with kids. Like, how do you do it all? And the answer that I heard that I loved was, well, you don't do it all at the same time.
True.
And so different points in your life, you might focus on certain passions that just fit in better to your life. For during COVID, I did a lot of Pilates. Now I don't do
Pilates. You did? We haven't talked about that.
Yeah,
I love Pilates.
I love Pilates too. And at this phase in my life that I'm in now, that doesn't really work for me, but now I still stay active and now I'm really into pickleball. And
yeah.
So I think it's about not being afraid to evolve with your life. And if there's something that you're really enjoying, leaning into that. I also think there's something about some people are specialists and some people are generalists, mm-hmm. meaning like, Tiger Woods or,
yeah.
you know, an Olympic gymnast. Like,
yeah.
They're a specialist. They do that one thing and it takes them pretty much all their effort to be as good at that one thing as they are. And I'm definitely more of a generalist. I like to be decently good at a lot of things versus necessarily being the best in the world at one thing. And I'm okay with that. I think that's the variety is the spice of life.
Yeah. Oh, that was a good quote. I haven't been on my quote game recently.
So I have all the quotes.
Okay. We'll use you. I also feel like, and maybe this is just like a personal observation that I've noticed, but I feel like a lot of people, even the specialists though, still have like a lot of interests and hobbies because I feel, at least for me, it makes me more productive at work or more productive in my workouts or more productive like with my friends and family when I'm doing a bunch of other things. When like, I don't know if that makes sense. Like, I feel like when I'm like the busiest in my life, I'm the most productive because I'm like touching a lot of things. And I feel like when you get a really good workout, then you're motivated to like work really hard at your job and then you're eating healthier. Then I don't know. But I just feel like when you have a lot of passions and you have a lot going on, your brain won't get like at least for me, I don't get hyper fixated on like one bad thing or one hard thing. I feel like I have like enough going on that I'm like, oh, that's good. You know?
So this is not a quote, but it's a law of physics, I think. Which is an object in motion tends to stay in motion.
Oh, yeah.
And I think about that a lot.
That's a good one. I learned that in, like, the sixth grade.
Particularly on the weekends. It's funny for me. I think about it a lot because I'll notice that on a day when I'm sitting on the couch, on my phone, on social media, scrolling TikTok or watching Netflix or something, then those days I just don't get much done until I get up and start doing something.
Yeah.
And then it kind of becomes this snowball totally. Of all the other things you get done. So I think I agree with what you're saying. It's like people who tend to be busy and do a lot of things tend to
be more productive and get more stuff done. Yeah.
And maybe they're valuing their time a little differently. But also for those people, because I am one of those people, I think it's harder for us to slow down and understand like how to rest and how to take care of ourselves versus just if you get your self-worth from accomplishing things, then sometimes slowing down and taking good care of yourself or being in a season of rest can be very difficult because you feel like your value is all tied up in what you got done versus being okay to rest.
Yeah. But they're both good in seasons of life for different things. But I feel like in summary, if you have multiple passions and can you pursue it all, I think both of our answers. We didn't even collaborate on this answer. But I would say we both feel like yes, like it's good and makes you productive and like you can do more.
I will say that it's one thing to have a lot of different interests and it's another thing to have too many goals at once.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to accomplish something big, I think sometimes you do have to set some other things aside to really get where you want to go.
Yeah.
Because where your effort goes, that's where your energy flows and you have to really sometimes make tough choices to decide what's important to you or what you want to accomplish. So I think it's about prioritization, but also not trying to force yourself to be just one thing.
That's true. One of my other bosses, Rachel's one of my bosses, but another boss once said like strategy is deciding what not to do. Obviously he was talking about like work specific stuff, but I think like even in life is like sometimes saying no to stuff is important. So obviously you can't do like everything well, but if you have a lot of passions, you can just like decide like Pilates worked great for you during COVID. Now you do pickleball with your family just like works.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question is how did you know what you wanted to do and how'd you decide your major? And how did you know your major suited you? Or did it suit you?
Yeah, I will say I'm one of the few people I know in adulthood that use my major every single day. I know so many people that went to school and studied something that they're not necessarily using the knowledge of their degree every day. One of the things that so let me start with how I chose my major. I am actually, like, the first question perfectly sets me up for this because I wanted to do so many different things. I still want to do so many different things. That I was having a really hard time deciding what direction to go in. And so I actually decided on a business management degree because for me, I felt like, well, business, you could apply that to any industry. You could apply that to any company, really. And there's going to be knowledge there that applies. And so that was kind of why I ended up going that route. And it has served me really well. And I think it turns out I really love leading people. And a lot of what I learned...
and you're good at it?
Oh, thank you. That means a lot to me. I try, and I fall short all the time, but...
No, you don't.
But I love it. I love... there's nothing more gratifying than seeing somebody that you feel like you've invested time or knowledge in and then see them turn around and thrive. Like, that's more them than it is you, but to feel like maybe you did something good and helped somebody along on their path. Because I will say I would not be where I am without all the people that did that for me. So so I think my major kind of naturally led me into leadership. But the other thing I'll say is that I think a lot about 18-year-olds today or, 16, 17, 18-year-olds today and the pressure of trying to choose a major, choose a path in life at that age when there's so much that you just haven't learned yet about yourself or about the world. And I think if I could give one piece of advice around that, I would say don't get hung up on what it is. You can change your mind.
Yeah.
And look at all the people out there in the world that have degrees that don't use them. I think to a certain extent, getting a degree is just as much about signaling that you know how to make a commitment and finish something and that you can see something through to the end. As it is about learning a specific function. Now, obviously, that's less true if you're studying to become a heart surgeon or something like that. But for what I do, I feel like I could have studied finance or I could have studied human behavior or psychology and I could still kind of have found a similar career path route.
Yeah. I feel like I have a very different experience in choosing my major because I like wanted to go to law school and then I like wanted to do broadcast journalism and then I ended up in marketing.
Yeah.
And so I ended up studying broadcast journalism, which has basically nothing to do with what I do today, but I did learn, I mean, to your point, like, I learned how to commit to something and just, like, do it. And I did learn, like, storytelling, which is very relevant in marketing. And so I think if you're going, to your point, like, wanting to be, like, a heart surgeon, or you want to be an engineer, or you want to be, like, a therapist or something like that, I feel like it's important to probably, like, find that major and, like, see what works. But I think there are so many, like, random, I don't know if you feel like this, but I always ask people what they do, and I'm like, I've never even heard of that.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
So I feel like there's no way at, like, 16, 17, 18 to know. My job didn't even exist when I was 16, 17, 18.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
How could I have known? Like, so I think not putting too much pressure on yourself. Yeah. If you're interested in something, just, like, commit to it and go with it. But if it changes, it changes.
Well, yeah, and I think to that point, like, just try to get warm. You know, like that game you used to play with your kid, like, are you getting cold or are you getting warmer?
Yeah.
And just try to get warm, because I love the example of broadcast journalism. You learn about communicating with people. You learned about storytelling. You learned about how presenting yourself matters. And all those things matter in business, and they matter in marketing and to varying degrees, depending on what it is you're doing. But you got warm, and so what you learned still applies, which I think is great. Another thing, and this is something I tell myself a lot, because I turned 40 this year, so
40 and thriving. Yeah, I was gonna say 40 and 30, 40, but then I was like,
it's 30 flirty and thriving, and I don't know what it is, 40 something.
Yeah, I thought it was thriving, but I'm like, 40, I'll make up a new one.
It's fine, we'll come up with something.
40 but, and killing it.
No thanks, but I'll take that. But I have a girlfriend that I went to high school with who literally just became a doctor
year.
She's a couple years older than me, actually.
That's amazing.
And she just got, you know, finished up school and is becoming a doctor. And to become a doctor in your 40s, it's not super traditional. But
that's
good for
amazing.
Her. She decided she studied one thing. She changed her mind. She decided that she had a passion and a calling to be in the medical profession in a different way than she was. And she went for it. And I think so often
I have chills. That's so cheesy, but that's like so inspiring. I feel like I'm old, and I know I'm not, because you'll look at me and be like, you're not, but I'm like, oh, I can't change my mind. But it's like, you can change your mind at any time, you know?
You absolutely can. And I think, you know, I say that like, yeah, absolutely. I had a little bit of a hard time turning 40, but I literally got on the internet and Googled like people who have accomplished cool things, you know, after 40. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. And that brings me. I just needed that little bit of
reassurance.
Like, you know, you're just getting started still. It's okay.
Yeah. It makes me think of, I don't know if you watch Grey's Anatomy or anyone listening watch Grey's Anatomy, but there's like, I think he's like 68-year-old intern in Grey's Anatomy, and I don't know, probably one of the later seasons.
Yeah.
And people didn't like make fun of him, but people are like, oh, you're older. Like, I thought you'd be like the doctor. But I just remember watching those episodes and I was like, I love that he's like a 60 something year old intern. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, just like continuously learning and like growing and evolving. And I know there's a lot of questions on like pivoting and stuff later, but no one has it. I think that's another thing too, is unless you think differently, but I feel like no one has it figured out.
No.
Even people that like choose a major or are in a really amazing job, like you talk to them and they're like, just winging it, you know? So, like, not overthinking your major, like, that you have to have it figured out, because I don't think you do.
I think that's a good theme also for going into your career of, you know, if someone had told me on day one after graduating college and starting my first job that I would be 40 years old and doing what I'm doing today, I could have never imagined a path from there to here.
Really?
I don't think so. And you know, this job probably is more in line with my dream career than some of the actual steps that got me here, which I think is an important point, because I think that sometimes it's easy to get in the mentality of having almost too solid of a plan to where you're not open to the opportunities that present themselves or the people that present themselves or the opportunities to learn. And so I think keeping an open mind, like, I think it's a balance of knowing where you want to go, but also keeping an open mind to the things that you can't control that might come your way that might be amazing for you.
Yeah.
It might teach you things that you didn't even know you needed to know.
Yeah.
And so I think sometimes in those situations, really following your gut, if you have a good gut and you can kind of have a sense, and also seeking advice from people with wisdom. You know, I think I've never been afraid to go to my dad when he was around and ask him his opinion on things. I have friends that are friends and mentors that have spoken into my life and that have earned a right to do that by the way they live their lives. And so I think kind of collecting, I heard somebody say once that you need a board of directors for your life.
Oh, yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, and so maybe it's 2 people, maybe it's 4 people, but maybe it's 12 people. But having that list of people, in, at least in your mind, if not written down somewhere, of these are the people's opinions that I'm actually going to really seriously consider. And you still have to make the call yourself because you're an adult or close to it. And, and you're going to own the consequences of the decisions that you make. But nothing wrong with asking other people's opinion. You don't have to figure it all out on your own.
Yeah. We could have like a whole other episode probably on like mentorship and stuff like that, because I think it's so important. But I really do think like they help you so much and have personally as well like made a huge decision, and deciding like a major or a college or a career, like just getting people's advice on like what they think you're good at. Like the smartest people, in my opinion, ask questions. And I, as Rachel probably knows, I try to ask a lot of questions, but because I'm like, I always want to know like, what am I good at? Or like, what do you see I can improve on? And like things like that, because maybe you think you're really good at something, but really you're horrible at it. Or maybe you don't think you're good at something and you actually are good at it.
Yeah.
Like I was in a review today and I marked that I wasn't good at something. And then my boss was like, not this boss, Rachel, but a different boss was like, no, I actually think you're better at that. And I was like, oh, okay, that's good to know. And then vice versa, there are some things that I thought I was better at that I actually am bad at, you know? So anyways, I think understanding like what you're good at and bad at and stuff and deciding a major is really helpful.
Yeah.
And like, that's why I wanted to be a law. I wanted to go to law school is because I don't want to say I liked arguing, but I don't know, I guess.
Debating.
Yeah, I liked debating. And so I was like, that's going to be my thing. But then when I talk to people and like, what am I good at? I was not good at reading, and like I was not good at writing, and that's like so much of
what being a lawyer
is. And every time I talk to someone, they're like, you're smart, but that's not your strength, you know? And I was like, oh, okay, thank you. So I feel like under asking people and getting their feedback. So think back to kind of like gut feelings and knowing what to do. What are your thoughts on grad school?
Or
school in general?
I kind of still feel very similarly to what I said earlier on, just kind of showing that you can finish something as far as undergrad goes. Not everyone needs an undergrad. It very much depends on what you want to do. I will definitely encourage my kids to do it.
Yeah.
So I still see value in it. But the world is changing also. So I think to your point on not knowing you would be doing this when you were 16 years old because the job didn't exist.
Yeah.
I guess I'll wait till they're that age to decide how I feel about it for them. But for grad school, it's an interesting one because I feel like grad school, there was a moment in time where it was almost required.
Oh, really?
In the business world. Where
that's true,
like,
yeah.
I would say maybe 10 years ago, it was like, okay, well, if you want to, not required, but I think it was just a lot more prevalent. And if you didn't have it, then there were certain people, most of the people that did have a master's, that we're probably looking and saying, well, I'm going to prioritize these candidates over those candidates.
Yeah.
I don't think it's really that way as much anymore.
Yeah.
I definitely don't look at candidates' resumes and say, oh, this person doesn't have a graduate degree.
Yeah.
They're going in the no pile.
Like, yeah.
That's not at all the way that I would approach that. For myself, though, it's interesting because I got my undergrad and then decided that I did not want to get a master's. And I worked for 10 years, or maybe it was more like 8 years. And I just, at one point, I kind of got curious about it. I looked into it, and the school that I wanted to go to was going to be kind of pricey, and I just couldn't figure out how I would pay for it, and I just decided I'm not going to do it. So maybe about 6 months later, this is a funny story, but I was on an airplane, and
I'm like, I don't know this story.
Yeah, and the there was this man, this very, like, Alec Baldwin kind of looking man sat down next to me, and we just started chatting, and just this great conversation, and towards the end of it, he was like, what do you do? And I was in sales at the time. I told him I was in sales, and he was like, do you have your master's degree? And I said, no, you know, I looked into it, but it was too expensive. And he said, you need to look into it again. He said, if your resume came across my desk, I wouldn't even give it a second look because you don't have a master's and you could go really far. You need to look into it again. Promise me you'll look into it again.
Interesting.
And so, funny story, I did look into it again and I found a different, very reputable school, local to where I was living at the time. It was in Austin. and I decided to do it. And so it was so funny, whenever I finished it a couple years later, I sent, we had connected on LinkedIn, I sent a note, and I was like, hey, thanks for taking taking time to encourage a stranger to push themselves.
Yeah, I love that. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And it's also a reminder to talk to strangers on the airplane or wherever.
I try not to anymore, but yeah. No, I'm just kidding. It was a very, I guess, fortuitous seatmate for that plane ride. But I think what I got out of it was I had a lot more practical application for the concepts I learned. So I have a business degree and then I got an MBA, which is kind of like doubling down on the same thing. But it meant a lot more to me after working 10 years because I had a lot more situational. I've just been through more things that I could apply those concepts to in my mind, and it made them more meaningful to me. So I feel like I got a lot out of it. And then the truth of the matter is it opened doors for me.
Yeah.
In the company that I was working for at the time, I was in sales, and I went and asked the marketing VP if I could do an internship for credit, because I'm all about killing two birds with one stone. I was like,
always.
I can make new relationships in the company I work for, and I can get marketing experience where I'm more on the sales side, and I can get credit. Okay, let's do this.
Yeah.
And then I ended up getting a job through that, getting a promotion.
Oh, yeah.
So I went from being a sales manager to being a marketing director, and I had no practical marketing experience, but it was because they knew me and they knew my track record of being a hard worker and being willing to figure things out.
Yeah.
And I still say that marketing VP was crazy for hiring me because I did not know what I was doing.
Yeah.
But she gave me a long kind of runway to figure it out, and it was such a fortuitous thing for my path. So if I hadn't met the guy on the plane, then I wouldn't have got the internship, then I probably wouldn't even be sitting here right now, because it's
and that would be really sad.
I know,
yeah, and
sad
one
too.
Thing like led to another.
Yeah, one thing led to another.
Before we move on into like experience and finding a job and stuff, just to like close out and summarize passion and like, you know, how to figure out your major and what you're good at and stuff like this. How did you specifically know what you were good at and what are your passions, and did they always align with like your major and career? Because you had, to your point earlier, I keep saying to your point earlier, but I like to bring it back. You said like some of your jobs didn't always like, you didn't know how it would lead to what you're doing today.
Yeah.
But how did you feel about like your passions and how did you navigate that?
Yeah, good question. So when I think back to like when I was a little girl, I always wanted to be a fashion designer.
I want to be a fashion designer in my next life.
Right? That's like the most
glamorous. Or work in fashion or something.
So I always wanted to be a fashion designer. I was always sketching in my little sketch pad outfits and dresses.
I'm not that creative.
My grandmother actually was a really great seamstress, and so she taught me to sew. And so I actually got to make some of the things that I designed. It never came out quite as good as it was in my mind, but it was a really fun kind of creative outlet for me. And so I always imagined myself being in fashion. I even considered going to fashion design school, which again, I'm curious to know what that life would have looked like. But I decided to go the business route because I felt like it was a little more broad, and if I changed my mind, which I was notorious for, then it would still apply. So I think that helped me. And then I ended up in my first job, I was actually working in retail management, and this is an important lesson too, I was completely miserable. So I worked for a retail store, it's not around anymore, but kind of a big department store. And I worked there for 6 months only after I got my degree. And it was still to this day feels like the longest job I ever had.
Really? I've heard about this. Yeah.
And it just was not a fit for me for the point in my life that I was at and for my skill set. I wasn't good at it at all. And I wasn't getting better at it.
Yeah.
You know? And so as much as, you know, I was saying about going to school, how important it is to show that you can finish something, there's also the other side to that coin, which is when something is not a fit, there's no need to be completely miserable for a lot. Your life is short.
Yeah, true.
And so having the courage to call it, and again, seeking counsel from your parents or other people that you respect when you're kind of having these doubts, and having them help you decide if this is a struggle that you need to continue down for the sake of character building, or if this is just not where you're, you know, this is not for you.
Yeah.
So after that, I ended up landing a job in beauty.
The dream.
And so I'm telling you all this to say that beauty does, in my mind, tie very pretty closely to fashion. Mm-hmm. I think I call beauty friendlier fashion.
Yeah.
I think the industry in general is pretty open-armed to people. And
More so than fashion, probably.
More so, I imagine. I don't know because I've never actually operated in that world. But just, you know, from watching The Devil Wears Prada, that's my assumption. And so, in a way, again, like, not a direct connection back to my passions, but I still love fashion. I think about fashion as being very adjacent to beauty. A lot of the trend and all of that is very related. And so, in a way, I did kind of find myself into a career that lets me still spend time and thought energy around what I love. I think again, going back, I guess maybe there's a theme arising, which is just try to get warm, you know, and see what happens.
And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You can change your mind.
You can change your mind.
Okay. To jump next to like experience and job hunting, there were a couple questions like around how to get your foot in the door and how'd you find a job with little experience? Obviously you said like just get warm to something, mm-hmm. but anything else on how to get your foot in the door, especially without experience?
I would never underestimate the power of asking for help.
Amen. That's true.
And
everyone needs help. Yeah, I need help every day. Yeah.
And the truth is most people love to help someone else.
True.
Like, when was the last time somebody asked you for help and you were like, ugh, how dare they ask me for help?
Yeah.
No, there's almost like an honor that comes with someone trusting you enough to be vulnerable and say, hey, I need your help, or hey, I need your advice, or hey, I see that you are connected to somebody at this company and I really want this internship.
Yeah.
Is there anyone that you could put in a good word for me with?
Yeah.
And I think there's also nothing wrong with just being super scrappy and going for it. Because people appreciate that a lot too.
Totally.
So even if you don't have a connection or a lot of connections, I didn't have a family that was really connected that, you know, I'm not what do they call it? A legacy in a college or any of those things. But I just kind of always
got your hands dirty.
Got my hands dirty, and I wasn't afraid to ask for help. And
so
I would say that's a big one. Is don't be afraid to ask for help. And then the other thing is to get your foot in the door. Like I was giving the example earlier about the internship. I did an unpaid internship.
Totally.
While I had a full time job and I was going to school.
Yeah.
And so
that's a lot.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
But I was really determined to show my value and that I was going to add value.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big mistake I see people make early in their careers and in, I'll say, the first 10 years of their careers, is they're really focused on what they want and what, you know, what experience they want and what journey, you know, what they want their next step to be. And I think you have to have all those things in your mind. Those are great things to be clear on.
Mm-hmm.
But what I would encourage people to focus on even more, or at least as much, is what kind of value are you offering the organization where you work, whether it's a nonprofit or a business, or how are you delivering value every single day? How did you move the ball forward for that team or for the company? And that's a way that you just can't lose. If you're showing up every day and making things happen and having big ideas, even sometimes when they're maybe dumb or you're scared to say them out
loud. I've had lots of dumb ideas.
I've had so many dumb ideas. I have at least like a handful of
dumb
ideas
a day. I have like
20 a day.
And
I promise you, I said half of them out loud.
Yeah.
And you just kind of have to lose that pride of being wrong, because the truth is, when you say an idea and it's a bad idea, or it's not that it's a bad idea, but it's not executable for whatever reason, or there's some reason why the company hasn't done that before, the worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to learn something. And maybe you'll feel a tiny bit foolish, but you will have learned something that you would not have learned if you wouldn't have put yourself out there. And so I think if I were to give, you know, a piece of advice to people starting their careers is add value, and
raise your hand for stuff.
Raise your hand, like,
for anything.
Sign up for the extra project, get the experience. And you know, once you land that first job, treat it like it's your dream job and see how far you can go, because I think that initiative leaders are looking for that. And we're not looking only at, you know, upper management. We're looking at the people coming in because we know that those 20-year-olds, they're going to help us stay relevant, both as individuals, I think, and also as brands and as companies. And you know, they're the workforce coming in, so we need to understand what's important to them. And we're not going to be able to understand that if they don't talk to us.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like not being scared to just, like, message them and say, like, this is my dream company. I'll work, you know, I'll do your laundry for free. Like, I don't know. Like, yeah. I never offered to do anyone's laundry, so I shouldn't be saying anything. But just, like, whatever, if there is a specific thing that you are interested or potentially interested in, just to, like, find them, message them, and then, like, you know, offer value. A lot of times it's free at first, and then, you know, hopefully from there they want to reward you and you work really hard and you continue to raise your hand, and then they'll continue to hopefully, like, reward you. But then if you hate it, then
yeah,
okay, great, you hate it, and you at least, like, mark something off your list that you know you didn't
completely.
Like,
and the truth is, even if you get nowhere, you still get further than if you do nothing.
Yeah, yeah,
true. So what's the one action you can take? How can you be creative? How can you be disruptive to use, you know, more of a marketing approach? How can you kind of be outside the norm in a way that is attention getting but still respectful? And I think that's always valuable. Did I answer the question?
No, you did. Okay. And then that made me think. I know I said I've been off my quote game, and I really have, but it did make me think of my sister Ellie's favorite quote. I don't know if it's favorite because she has a lot of quotes, but she said it was her favorite recently. But there's no growth in the comfort zone and no comfort in the growth zone, which I just feel like if you, you know, want to find out what career you're interested in or how to get your foot in the door, like, you kind of have to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not really comfortable messaging people and being like, hey, what can I do for you? But yeah. You need to offer value and just kind of, like, push yourself. So,
you know, one other kind of, this is a kind of silly tip, but I think so much of getting your foot in the door or raising your hand is about confidence.
True.
And I was saying earlier, I'm kind of an achiever. Like, I get my confidence based on what I've gotten done.
Me too. Sorry, we're so similar. Yeah,
totally. Like, what have I done? What have I done lately?
Yeah. What have I accomplished? Yeah. What have I checked off my list?
And so something I did, I started doing this when I was in that marketing director role, that first job I was telling you about earlier. Not first job, but the first kind of office job, I guess, I ever was in. I was not feeling confident. I didn't really know what I was doing, and I knew that. And so I actually made a file.
Yeah,
love that. And I called it my brag file, and it was just for me.
Oh, genius.
But it was anytime something happened where I got really positive feedback. Mm-hmm. It could have been a card from somebody that worked for me that said they appreciated
you
know, the way that I was leading, or it could be an email that I got from someone who was complimenting a presentation that I'd given. And I literally, it's kind of embarrassing now, but I actually think it helped me a lot. I would print those things out, or I would put those things in this file. And when I was having a really bad day, or I was feeling like a piece of human garbage, I would go back and look at that file and be like, no, this person said that I did good.
Yeah.
And it's a silly little thing, but I think it worked for me. And so how can you boost your confidence? Maybe that's not the way you want to go, but maybe you have a list in your mind of things, accomplishments that whenever you're feeling self-doubt creep in, that you remind yourself that you have done really hard things before. This is maybe an even slightly more mature version of me now saying,
I like the brag folder. I should have started that.
I feel like it's a good, like, first step.
Yeah.
And now I've, you know, been at this long enough to say, you know what, my value actually isn't in my accomplishments.
Yeah, okay, that's good.
And my value, you know, it's in, definitely not in my work accomplishments to what it was in my 20s and even my 30s. And I had some hard roads to learn that lesson, but my value is in what my family says about me and what my friends say about me. My value isn't what my team says about me. Their voice matters.
Yeah.
My value is also in what my boss says about me. You have to care about that.
Yeah.
My value is in what God says about me.
Yeah.
And so you have to be careful also as an achiever to not let your value get hung up in just one corner of your life, because then what happens when that corner falls apart, which
True.
It inevitably will, right?
Yeah.
Like, one or the other. It never all goes perfectly forever. So making sure that you're thinking about the right things and worrying about the right people's opinions.
Yeah. I think that's so important. Right, yeah. Because you can get hung up on people's opinions that just don't matter.
Yeah.
But I love that you said God's opinion, because that's true. And that's like the most important thing. And
absolutely.
Then I also just think too, like, on everything we've talked about, so I wish I would have said something sooner, but I feel like on deciding a major or figuring out what you're good at or getting your foot in the door or knowing what job to apply to, I think relying on God to like help make those decisions, like for me personally, has been the most impactful. You know, of course there's been like family and friends and husbands, and you know, they're all amazing too, but I think also just trusting that there is a plan. And
yes,
you talked earlier that, you know, some of the jobs were just kind of like stepping stones, and they maybe didn't make sense at the time, but they make sense now. So I think there's a lot of like hindsight that you just kind of have to like trust. And not to say like you were at your job for 6 months and you hated it and it was the worst. So not to say you always have to stick it out or make it work, but there are definitely times where you're like, okay, this isn't like my end goal game, but I'm just going to add value. I'm going to learn, and then go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there still are moments in time, and there will forevermore be moments in time when I don't know what to do. And in those moments, I definitely, I look to God, I pray, I seek godly counsel. You know, I ask people for people who I know are going to give me that righteous advice, what I should do. And I think that, to me, that's what I mean by gut, too. Because I think that my gut and my is almost like I look at that as guidance. And a lot of times my gut doesn't actually align with what I want to do.
Yeah.
If it aligns too closely with what I want to do, then I'm like, wait, is this God or is this me?
You're like, wait, what's doing the talking here?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Lastly, on kind of like just experience in job hunting, someone asked, what is your best advice for getting a good resume out of college with little experience?
Ooh, that's a hard one. And I totally have been there. I remember applying for jobs and it's like experience required. It's like, well, how do I get experience? Nobody will hire me. You know, I think there's always a way. I would say try to find places to volunteer. I would say look for paid internship opportunities. Again, never be afraid to ask for help. But the truth is people are going to want some kind of track record before they take a chance on you. And if you truly have no job experience at all, then maybe it's about trying to find a way to show what you're capable of. You know, if you can make some sort of portfolio or
website.
So there's a lot of different ways to signal that you're a go-getter and that you can get stuff done. And I would look for what those are.
Yeah. You said it nicer than me. I was like, you just have to get experience, like whatever you do. But to your, like, whether it is, you know, participating in a school service project or like running up, you know, whatever it is, team captain or applying to random internships, even though you're in 18 credits and just saying I can provide value 5 days a week, or showing your value by like creating a website, or even now with social media, it's so easy to like make stuff. And maybe you don't want to like be an influencer and you don't want to post your face, but maybe you just post like uplifting quotes on there,
or you
like love baking and you just like post, you know, to show like, oh, I started this and I grew it X percent, or anyways, whatever it is, or finding some way to show what you're working on.
Absolutely. I also think that there was some questions, I think, about networking. And I think that you can kind of kill two birds with one stone. If you're in a community that has a lot of, I mean, all communities have some level of nonprofit happening. Find one that has a cause that means something to you.
Yeah.
Get involved in it and network with all the other people involved there. You can, I mean, I've met some of the most incredible people through some of the nonprofit activities that I've done, and some of those people and some of those experiences have guided me to where I am. So I think it's not always, it doesn't have to be the traditional, I worked at this job for this long.
Yeah.
But you do need to be able to tell a story of what you're capable of and what you bring to the table. And again, going back to what kind of value that you
have. Yeah.
Because you kind of have to put yourself in their shoes.
Yeah.
And make it about how can I help them. And so the more you can find out, if you have a company that you're targeting that you want to work for, or an industry that you want to work in, just get really curious about what are their biggest problems and how can you help solve those.
Yeah, I love that. And to summarize, and you mentioned networking, but what would your best advice? Obviously, you said like join nonprofits and stuff, but any other advice on networking or searching for opportunities or roles?
That's a good one. I'm trying to think of like most, I'd say my last several jobs have come from people that I knew or that I've worked with in the past, which I think goes back to, another main theme of offering value. It's like you're building your professional reputation from day one.
Yeah.
So every single person, the person that you're working with next to in the fast food line, you don't know where they're going to be in 10 years and they don't know where you're going to be in 10 years. And they very well could be someone who can make an introduction for you or open a door for you or say, yeah, she was the best French fry fryer ever. She worked so hard.
She was
hard.
The hardest working French fry flipper fryer there is.
Like, she made those fries so crispy.
Yeah.
And so, no, but really, you don't know. And so I'll say, like, this job, I actually, just to super oversimplify it, I reached out to someone asking for advice on something having nothing to do with this. And that's kind of how we ended up reconnected. And now I ended up working here. The one before that, I got my foot in the door because a friend of mine was friends with someone else that worked there. And they were newer to the beauty industry. And so he said, we need to help her. We need to take her to lunch and help her. And she ended up being my next boss. So again, it's all about like those connections, and it never, it's not necessarily always straightforward of, hey, Paige, it's Rachel, I need something from you.
Yeah.
But the fact that we know each other and we've built trust, and maybe I've come to you and asked for help or I've offered help in the past, that's what relationships are, is showing up for each other. So.
Yeah. I feel like I'm probably not the best person to give advice because I started interning at this job that I'm at now 6 years ago, and I've stayed here the whole time. But I do, so obviously I haven't like really networked or like looked for other opportunities and roles, but I do feel like from what I've observed in corporate America, it's just like being a nice person. That sounds so cheesy, just like gets you, which is exactly what you're saying, like networking. And if you know, are, like I said, like a nice person and easy to work with and kind and, you know, curious about like what people are doing and stuff. Like, I think that's, in my opinion, probably the best way to like quote unquote network. I personally am not like a serial networker because I just sometimes feel like it's fake and I'm like, why do you really want to talk to me, you know? But I just feel like hopefully like the people that I've worked with and people that I've met one day will be like, oh, she was nice and normal and she wasn't drama and she was smart and hardworking, you know?
Yeah.
And then like things will fall into place when they do happen.
I think that's right.
Well, we took up so much time and we have so many more questions still. So we'll probably have to do a part two to finish out career advice, pivoting advice. So if you guys have any more questions, feel free to DM the That Girl Guide, anything else you want to understand or know about jumping into your first career, strategies for keeping a good work-life balance, how do you thrive in your career, or anything else that you might add.
So was
that
good?
I know there's so many good ones. So.
Well, I would thank you so much for having me. This has been so fun and I would love to be back. So
I know. Hopefully, Rachel's a busy girl. So hopefully we can find her soon to do a part two. But thank you everyone for listening, and thank you, Rachel, for coming. You're the best.